Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are going in Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the only pro wrestling podcast you need to be listening to right here at youtube.com/Steve and Larson. And anywhere fine podcasts are available, be sure to hit that subscribe button. That includes the iOS podcast app, where in the sports and rec category, we are number one. Look at that. Thanks to all the patrons out there.
It's not true.
Put us up in the number one spot. No, it's not true. I don't even know where we are.
You haven't searched in a while.
I have not. No, we're generally like, and there's so many podcasts out these days. Like everybody and their mom are getting a podcast.
I know.
And that just like sinks us down, but we're never that far. I mean, we're usually in like the one, considering we don't have like a parent company.
Yeah.
We don't have like a big sponsor or anything like that.
We're
number 99.
Cool.
We're above Eric Bischoff's podcast.
Cool.
Nice. Anyway.
Cool.
Anyways,
we're also at Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson.
Holy moly. We had a fantastic turnout there at our Patreon 1000 plus patron pizza party live stream. For patrons.
Yes.
It was fantastic.
Anyway, it was great.
We're going to be updating our Patreon June 1st. You know, we're sort of entering new phase.
Yeah, 10 days.
You know, right now the video that's up, it's like, we're hungry. We want to start a wrestling channel. Can you please support us? And now it's like, hey, we're well fed. Can you still please keep supporting us? No, it's not really that. But it is. Look, we reached a certain point and we have sort of figured out we want to give more of our patrons more access to more things. We want to make our Patreon
best value.
That's right, best value. So we're going to be adding some cool things come June 1st. So mm-hmm. Be sure to keep an eye on that at patreon.com/Steven Larson. And speaking of t-shirts, we also have a pro wrestling tee shop at prowrestlingtees.com/goinginraw. 10
mm-hmm.
10 wonderful 10. Designs right now. More to come.
Yes, more to come.
But we're here to talk about NXT TakeOver.
Chicago.
This happened Saturday night.
Yes.
And we're just getting around to reviewing it now.
Well, you just finished watching it this morning, Monday morning.
And we've got our Backlash review up now. We can't really...
If we put too much stuff up all at the same time, none of it does well.
Right, exactly.
We have to space things out.
Cannibalizes its own views.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's why it's going up Tuesday morning. We have our Raw review coming up later on in the day. However, right now we're going to talk about Eric Young versus Roderick Strong.
Yes.
This was a good match.
It was. Every match on this card was at least good, if not great.
Yeah. The only one I can say that was like so-so was the Asuka match. Otherwise, great, 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 very good.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Young versus Roderick Strong was a very good match.
It was.
Very stiff match.
Yes, very stiff.
This is a very
stiff
match.
That's the first thing I noticed, too.
Yeah, absolutely. This was cool. This was coming off the heels of the Roderick Strong video documentary promos that they were running.
Yeah.
And they were very strong.
Yeah.
And I thought that was not a pun. And I thought that... I figured this is the one match we actually differed on in terms of like who I was going.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I thought a case could be made for either one.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all knew that Roderick Strong would at some point get the win over Eric Young. I just thought they were going to build to it.
Right, yeah.
That's it.
So yeah, like a stiff match, good match.
The match started, Sanity came out first.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did their entrance.
Mm-hmm.
Roderick Strong's music hit, but he wasn't coming down the ramp, mm-hmm. so Sanity was kind of wondering what was going on. Roderick Strong ran in through the audience, attacked Damo and Alexander Wolf.
Took away the strength in numbers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Knocked them out.
It was good.
Took them out of the equation for at least the first part of the match. They would get involved later on. Did you notice the incredibly stiff knee kind of jumping top rope knee Roderick Strong delivered on Eric Young.
Yeah.
Very emblematic of the stiffness of this match. It seemed like a lot of the blows, a lot of the shots really hurt.
Yeah.
There's a few times during this match I did this. Ooh.
Ooh.
There was a bunch of very loud chops.
Yeah, those are my favorite. Those are my favorite. They don't really do that much damage. Like, I don't want to wake up the next day. I don't want to be in the receiving ends of them.
No.
I'm saying nobody's ever, have you ever heard, man, those chops last night, he had to retire today.
No. But I would think on a consistent basis, maybe we need to ask some of our people who have actually wrestled if this is the case. Like, if you're in the ring and, you know, you're taking bumps, maybe you're getting body slammed or whatever.
Yeah.
I would think if you had
swinging neck breaker.
I imagine that barely hurts at all. But if you're in a chop, if you're in a battle of chops between you and your opponent, and you see the welts that form in people's chests when they happen, that probably does hurt.
Oh, probably is good. Here's the thing. There's like paper cut hurt, and then there's I fell down hurt. And paper cut hurt is worse because it's so specific.
Yes.
When you're chopping, you're doing something very specific to a very specific fleshy part of your body.
And by and large, people do not pull punches on chops.
Right, exactly.
Because you want to, the whole impact of the chop is a sound of hand meeting chest.
And since you know that you're not, like, there's nobody's going to get injured.
Exactly.
Doing it, then they go all out. No, usually chops.
It hurts, but it won't injure you.
You know who probably should have retired after being chopped is that Aaron Sky kid here in Sacramento, SPW.
Oh, when J.R. Kratos.
Oh, my God. That dude's hand was like the size of this kid's chest.
And instantly, on one chop, you could see J.R. Kratos' hand imprint on his chest. And it was there the rest of the match.
That kid, he needs to, ooh, man, bulk up, kid. Oh, God, there goes Sting. Sting's down. We're going to Robin Hood.
So Roderick Strong did a whole bunch of backbreakers during the course of this match, and he hit one. One he hasn't done. Usually he wins on the sick kick.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even employ that this match. He did his suplex. Put him up like in a suplex position, and then kind of throws him up in the air, and then does a backbreaker.
Gives him like a back.
Well, I think that's what he used to do in Ring of Honor.
Which one's a lung blower? It's kind of a lung blower. Like he got down on his knees, hit the guy on his waist down.
Well, it's kind of like a lumbar check. Kind of. But for that, Cedric Alexander does like a belly to back position, and then does it. But this was a full on vertical suplex position. Throws him in the air.
Yeah.
And then has his opponent land across his knees.
Feels like everybody loses in that situation.
Potentially.
Because like you have like 200 pounds of a dude coming down on your knees, essentially.
That could hurt.
That seems like it hurt.
But it looks devastating.
Oh, it looks amazing. It looks fantastic. Anyways, Roderick Strong ended up picking up the win.
Somewhat surprising, but I guess not. It makes sense. Whatever you chose, you can make a case. In terms of who won this match, you can make a case for it.
I just felt that, like, out the gate on the heels of those video promos.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, totally. Next up, we had for the UK Championship, Tyler Bate versus Pete. I need to stop doing that. Versus Pete Dunne.
We saw this match. This was the finals in the UK tournament. Mm-hmm. Great match in its own right there.
Oh, yeah.
And they upped the ante.
They really did.
Busted out all sorts of moves that they did not even try to do in the UK tournament.
I can watch these UK guys go for days and days and days. I can really watch this. I really need to check out the UK tournament. If for nothing else, the Jim Ross green screen.
Oh, the special, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And Jim Ross, he
came out and called this match with
Nigel.
Yeah.
It was great, too, because, dude, I am loving Nigel McGuinness. He is so good. He's almost so good that he makes me forget that Percy Watson's there. Because Percy Watson at times goes completely silent. I noticed that during the main event here. I did not hear much of Percy Watson. There was so much Nigel McGuinness.
Mm-hmm.
And even I think, you know, it's always fun when you can hear the commentary team, in this case Nigel McGuinness, there's so much pride in that guy's voice because of his fellow countrymen stealing the show with this match. And I'm not going to go so far as to say they stole the show, but man, they raised the bar.
Oh, yes. And the crowd was so into it.
They were so into it. Their style of wrestling is so fun to watch. And the funny thing is, there's a lot of like technical and mat wrestling involved, and you wouldn't typically associate that with something that's fun to watch.
Well, stylistically, it's vastly different than what we're generally presented with by the WWE.
Yeah. Because
usually mat-based wrestling in WWE, this is usually is stuff that we would call rest holds, headlocks. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Stuff like
this
that.
This is hard-hitting, technical, free-flow, like very flow in wrestling.
There's that, but there's also the, as they they call it joint manipulation.
Yeah.
Which we don't really see in the American style very much, but it's fairly very prominent in the UK because it's stuff that Marty Scurll does, Zack Sabre Jr., Pete Dunne, where they'll bend the arm and wrist in an awkward manner and then, you know, pull fingers the wrong way and stuff like that. And it's they know how to do it at the right time to enhance the drama of the match.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, okay, we need to reset for a bit. Let's do a headlock.
Right, exactly. I never, ever get the feeling with these guys, and I know they do, but it's like they're wrestling in a somewhat different language than what we're used to seeing.
But also, Tyler Bate did a really good job of selling all the work that Pete Dunne was doing on his arm.
God, what was that move? What was the move that Tyler Bate pulled off? And it's he does this in every match where he shows us a new feat.
The corkscrew 450.
Yeah, that was good. But I'm talking about when he shows off just how much muscle in those trunks.
Yeah.
Those thighs of his.
Yeah.
And I forgot what he did. He deadlifted Pete Dunne in some position that was absolutely insane.
Yeah, the spin he did was the fastest I've ever
seen. I've never seen anything that fast. He did an airplane spin. And I've never seen anybody do it that fast. That was insane.
It was.
That was absolutely crazy.
Lots of near falls, a lot of really good action this match.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Pete Dunne ended up picking up the win with the bitter end.
Yes.
Did Tyler Bate hit Tyler Driver 97? No, he didn't.
I think the finish was him setting Pete Dunne up for that, and Pete Dunne reversed it into bitter end, if I remember correctly.
Man, such a good match.
Yeah,
I'm not about to say like this was... Look, man, until anybody comes close to Omega Okada, there's not going to be another match of the year. And in fact, I'll be honest with you, as much as I just completely... love this match. I thought this was actually the third best match on the card.
Interesting.
To be honest with you.
Interesting.
Next up was probably the worst match on the card, and it wasn't even a bad match.
Still a really good match.
Yeah. Asuka defended her women's NXT Women's Championship against Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross in a triple threat match.
Yes.
Asuka ended up picking up the win as she sort of covered both competitors. What was the story of this
Ruby,
match?
The story of this match was...
kind of feel it should have been one thing, but the addition of Nikki Cross made it into another thing. Because I like that they book her as sort of almost oblivious to what's going on.
Yeah, but
in a way.
But her focus, Cross's focus, seemed more on Ruby Riott than the title.
Exactly.
At least it was on equal footing.
They didn't really... It wasn't like, hey, let's both, as competitors, understand that Asuka is the monster here and we should take care of that.
I know.
Instead, you had the wild card, Nikki Cross, who just wants to just lay into people in general.
Yeah.
And Ruby Riott was her first focus.
Yes.
And so there was a lot of that going on, and then Asuka sort of taking advantage of that.
But it wasn't as if Asuka was dominant throughout the match.
Mm-mm, no.
Both Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross... you know, got their hits in on Asuka.
Mm-hmm.
And the finish saw, I believe, Ruby Riott hit Nikki Cross with her finisher as she was going for the pin.
Right.
Asuka comes in and gives her, I think, a shining wizard.
Yeah.
And Ruby Riott sold the hell out of it because I watched it four or five times to make sure she didn't get knocked out.
Yeah.
She did a great job selling that. Yeah. And then Asuka covered both of them.
Yeah. And you got the win. And that's great. I mean, that's a hell of a visual there. Asuka pinning, two more competitors just...
At the same time. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Ember Moon is going to be the one that takes that title off Asuka.
We'll see. I think, you know what? I think that it's... I will say this. I think it is her position to lose.
Yeah.
I think that that's what they want to have happen. Be interesting to see. It'll just be interesting to see if that's the direction they go. There's nobody else. Is there anybody else coming in? Did you hear about the what's her name? The one that was just signed to us.
Oh, they had to change her finisher because Bailey sometimes uses it.
Have you seen the elbow drop that she does? It's fantastic. It is so weird and cool.
Oh, I have seen it. Yeah.
And interesting.
I know.
And they're making her change that because of Bayley's Macho Man elbow drop.
Which she doesn't even use all the time. It's not her finisher.
That's so horrible. Weird. That's absolutely horrible. Anyways.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I don't know. I'll say this. I think it kind of depends on if... There is no other option, I think. Asuka needs to move on. They need to get that title off her. Ember Moon is absolutely booked really, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes all the sense in the
world.
It
really does.
I still get the feeling that they're not entirely sure what her character, what they want her character to be. I think that they're scaling down the mystique. And if I'll put it this way, if they hit a rhythm with who she is, then I think absolutely. I think they just need to do that.
I just had a thought. You know, for weeks, if not months, we've been talking about how Ember Moon needs Mystique because mm-hmm. that's something Asuka hasn't ever faced. But maybe what the plan is to really have Asuka kind of get too involved in her own Mystique, the hubris,
mm-hmm.
And that ends up costing her the belt in a sense. And, you know, to play off that, they need Ember Moon to be a really grounded character in their
yeah.
eyes. Maybe that's the direction they're going in.
You know what? It could be that. It could be storyline motivated. You could be right. It could also simply be when the higher-ups saw Ember Moon on the mic, because she does come across as a very genuine person.
Yeah.
She doesn't come across as a character. Maybe they were just more impressed with that. Maybe they just felt, hey, you know what? We don't need to doll up with all this Mystique stuff. Maybe we can save that type of character for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just roll with her as who she is. And they sort of slowly dialed it back. They eventually got rid of the contacts.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually blah, blah, blah. That wouldn't surprise me either, in which case I would feel like they do have a direction with her.
Yes.
And yeah, I think her odds of taking that title are pretty good. Here's my thing. I really, really want them to build up that Eclipse in a less clunky way than they have. When they did it with Billie Kay.
Well, it seems so sudden, that's why.
Yeah, I know. It seemed jarring, and it seemed like a shoot. And that's not really the direction you want to go. When they just say, oh, yeah, she's injured a couple people in the performance center, that's not enough, man.
No.
I want to see her. I want to see some people get laid out. That's what we need. We need to see more matches on TV
yeah.
in the buildup with that Eclipse laying people out.
Yeah.
Next up, I thought this was a fantastic match.
Man. Oh, yeah.
Bobby Roode versus Hideo Itami. I watched it this morning. And my God, Blompier, I think.
Yeah.
Adam.
Yeah.
Tweeted out after this match something along the lines of, I see Hideo Itami as a main event star now. And I looked at that and I was like, that might be going a bit far. I watched the match this morning. Holy cow, that was a great match.
And
Hideo Itami was, I was all in on that guy. Holy cow. Bobby Roode is a freaking star maker.
Oh, yeah.
Because so much of that match was Bobby Roode's ability to tell a story. And I love that he is really this fantastic. You've called him a strategist. I've used the word opportunist. And I like my way of putting it simply because he can find the opportunity and turn it into a win. And
oh, yeah.
That's what it is. It's
that was definitely more the case in this match. But I mean, like, I guess the kind of tactical.
And his first win against Shinsuke as well.
Oh, I always thought the first win against Shinsuke seemed to me like he had a strategy well before the match started, and he followed up.
Yeah,
the
but
end.
Was that
and,
was
but he was presented with the opportunity with Shinsuke getting hurt.
That's
and
the
they
thing.
Took advantage
it was right
of, but it
there.
Was all
it
because
was right there.
It's because Shinsuke had to go outside where he normally does to
that,
counter
that,
Bobby
true,
Roode's
that's
strategy.
That's true as well. That's true as
and
well.
Thus hurt himself.
I just really like that. He's the guy, once you make one single mistake, he knows how to pounce on that.
Yeah.
What a fantastic, and I don't want to say subtle, it's a very substantive sort of, it's a very substantive way of winning. It's,
yeah.
It's,
well, that's why
it's ingrained in the match itself.
That's why I don't initially say, I use the word tactical versus strategic, because
yeah.
it's, I mean, you know, being a tactician is partially strategy, but is also taking advantages of the opportunities as they present themselves.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah. I mean, he's, because the thing is, there's nothing that he does that's extra spectacular.
No. He's just a great storyteller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he really is. Like, he's got it down perfectly. That finish was so freaking well done. That finish was so great. It was essentially, so what was the story of this match? You always break down the stories of the matches really well.
It was Hideo Itami working Bobby Roode's arm.
Right.
And
he
Itami,
was taking Bobby out of his own game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Roode was working Hitami's leg.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Itami with the shoulder injury, granted that was like a year ago
yeah.
or almost that he came back from it.
Well,
but
he's got that big-ass scar to
I know,
remind
everybody. I know. So, I mean, going into it, I would have expected Bobby Roode to work the shoulder and Hitami to work the leg, but it was the inverse of that. And I thought that was an interesting take on it.
Yeah.
And they really played up how, with Rude's shoulder being compromised, he couldn't hit the DDT
mm-hmm.
at least as effectively as he wanted to. And it was great at the end. How does he counter that? He gives him two of them.
Yeah, but he hit one that Adeo kicked out of. And then
because Rude was selling the shoulder.
And Nigel McGuinness made that point. Like, that's the thing about Nigel McGuinness, because he was a wrestler for so long.
Yeah.
He can articulate. He can sell these things so perfectly and not get lost in it.
Yep.
It's really great commentary. And then, yeah, like you said, so Adeo goes for the GTS. I think, didn't he?
He hit one earlier, and then Bobby rolled out of the ring.
He hit one, and seamlessly Bobby rolled out of the ring. Again, the tactician stuff, you instinctually know, start rolling, and he's not going to be able to pin you, which is great. So then walk me through the finish, because I thought it was he tries to go for another one. Bobby ends up hitting his DDT.
And then, he does, but then he doesn't let go. He picks him back up and gives him another one.
And the crowd gasped when he started. They gasped when he started rolling for the other one. It was a fever pitch finish, and those are the best types. When the match can build so expertly into a finish like
that,
it's something else, and not a lot of people can do it as expertly as I've seen Bobby Roode do this a couple times.
Oh, his whole run in NXT so far has been one, like, he's a storytelling expert in the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing but his in-ring style is spectacular.
Yeah.
Nothing jumps out at you. It's like, wow, I can't believe that's in his arsenal, that stuff he can do. He's just such a brilliant storyteller in the ring. And as you said, he's very effective about making his opponent look great.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that's so underrated these days.
You have AJ who does the same. Kevin Owens does that too. Yeah. Seth Rollins can do that.
Yeah, yeah. But those two, but AJ and Bobby Roode, I've noticed both lately, especially. Well, AJ since he's been around.
But, look at the match between AJ and Kevin Owens at Backlash.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens dominated that match.
Mm-hmm.
Dominated.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. Next up, we had DIY versus Authors of Pain. I can't think of a better send-off match. The story of DIY, I'll be honest with you. For a while, I thought the Revival were my favorite tag team in the world. DIY has...
Well, I guess now they Revival kind of have to be your favorite tag team in the world.
I know. Makes me sad. So DIY,
they were paired together.
Yeah.
They were in a tag team previously, at least in WWE continuity.
Yeah.
And they were kind of almost at first not really into the idea of tagging together, if I remember correctly.
I think so, yeah.
And eventually they developed a bond, became best friends.
Father, son.
As we put it, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've had so many really fantastic moments, like the Cruiserweight Classic when they had a match against each other, and that moment in the ring.
Yeah.
When they lost to the Revival in Brooklyn last year for the tag titles. There was after that match, was a great moment between the two of them. They had so many of them.
Yeah.
And
there is no other tag team that has the emotional bond that the crowd buys into as much as with DIY.
Yes.
And NXT is the perfect setting for that.
It really is. And after this match, we were getting another one of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
In the way they set things up, it was like, okay, they had the moment in the ring. They walked up the ramp, essentially saying their goodbye to the NXT universe before we all assumed.
They ran the copyright, the trademark thing.
Yeah, we thought the show was over.
Yeah.
And, this was their last match at NXT before getting called up to the main roster, either on Raw or SmackDown.
And we're just sitting here thinking, are they going to go to SmackDown? Are they going to Raw? Which one would make more sense for them? What's going on? And then Ciampa turns to Gargano
and says, this wasn't our moment, this is my moment.
Yeah. Throws him into the wall and just completely decimates him. And there is that moment where Gargano,
after the first knee, when Gargano looks up and is like,
yeah,
why are you doing this to me?
But there's that moment, but he's also crawling towards his best friend because he's like, you're my father.
Well, there was that after the first knee, and then Ciampa was sitting on the announce table with Gargano on him. It's the same thing. Gargano was trying to tug at him and look at him and try to get an answer about why this was happening, and then Ciampa dumped him through all those tables on the outside. The last shot with Ciampa sitting on the announce table, just kind of looking over all that he had done, and Ciampa just, there's layers to what
I know, man,
was going on in
that
him.
Face of his is amazing.
Yeah,
it's an amazing.
So many
face.
Layers, and what I liked about that is that nothing about it necessarily felt premeditated.
Right. Yeah.
It all felt like it was in response to what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, let's go back to what happened during this match.
Yeah, it was. Here's my thing. So this is why DIY up until it broke up was my favorite tag team, because we got so many amazing high spots, and that's the kind of thing you get like in a Young Bucks match. Yeah. And the Young Bucks can, they can claim that they're the best in the world and they have every right to say that. And I love them. I think they're great.
Yeah.
But to have the emotion that these two put in, ingrained in their matches, in their relationships, or in their relationship, that to me is the biggest, is the biggest X factor for why I think they're the best in the world. Because they put on these amazing storytelling matches. They're not just spot fests.
Yeah.
They are, they're really like just works of brilliant storytelling. Mm-hmm. And that's, I've never seen this with anybody else. Like, it's so flipping good. But yeah, and I mean, this match was just all just chock full of, like I said, a combination of high spots. There's that moment where Gargano pushes Ciampa out of the way to absorb a ladder shot.
I know.
Like, he's sitting there sort of in a daze, Ciampa is, and one of the authors of pain is about to ram him with the ladder. Gargano runs over there, and it's all foreshadowing for what happens later.
Exactly.
That's beautiful. I know. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, then Gargano eats the ladder to the face, sells it well.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, you talk about high spots. There was the early in the match, DIY set up, you know, they said the 20-foot ladder is probably 15 feet, maybe 12, next to the ring, and it was just hanging out there for the first two-thirds of the match.
Yeah.
Authors of Pain at one point set up two ladders parallel to each other on opposite sides of that ladder.
Yeah, so they're like, they're resting on the ring and the barricade.
Yeah, and the Authors of Pain were getting ready to powerbomb Gargano and Ciampa through those ladders. DIY reverses it, gets Authors of Pain on those ladders and do a double splash off the giant ladder onto the Authors of Pain, sending them through the ladders on the outside.
It was, and it was a beautifully framed sequence camera wise.
Yeah.
Like, that camera sitting there and you have like in perfect symmetry. Yep. It was like a Kubrick shot.
Yeah.
It was perfect symmetry. And the look from both of them to each other, realizing the position that they had them in and what they can then do, and do you want to do this? The crowd starts chanting, please don't die.
Yeah.
And they both ascend, go pretty high up, and they both eat crap.
Yeah.
You know, like, they both overshoot the ladder.
Yeah, yeah. Ciampa looks like it landed on his head.
Yeah, they both. I mean, when I was like, Gargano, what did you just do there? Because Gargano's ladder didn't even break.
Yeah.
He, like, launched over it. And so that was a beautiful sequence. There were so many great moments of, there was that one moment where both the authors were near the central ladder in the ring, and they lifted both men up for power bombs, and both guys jumped up from the power bomb position onto the ladder.
Yeah.
There were so many great transitions like that where they would use the moves to transition into a situation of sort of getting the advantage.
There was that one time where one of the authors, a pain guy, just was holding a ladder up and Ciampa sort of running up the ladder.
Yes!
While
he's holding it for him, essentially. Yeah. There was the moment where one of the authors had the ladder draped over his head, and they both did the finisher on him.
Yeah, that was great.
That was great. There was the moment when Johnny Gargano gave Paul Ellering a super kick.
Yeah.
That was so beautiful. He was climbing the ladder. Paul Ellering comes in, tries to knock the ladder down. Gargano comes down. Paul Ellering's like yelling at him.
I love that happened, and then afterwards, they made a huge deal on commentary about how the Authors of Pain, how they would be able to work without Ellering's guidance.
Yeah.
But then they cut to Ellering on the outside. He's laying on the mat on the outside.
Yeah.
Can't move. He's not moving.
Right.
Except he's got his hand out, like barking orders.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
No, dude, he does this. He says, put him down.
I know.
Put him down.
I know.
He's got the thumbs down. Put him down.
It's great.
Oh, it was beautiful. There were so many.
There was a spot where one of the Authors of Pain was climbing the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Ciampa comes up. This was after Gargano took the ladder to the face.
Yeah.
And gives a German suplex to one of the Authors of Pain through a ladder.
Yeah.
Ladder
so like broke. And like earlier, like much earlier, a ladder just ended up sort of resting in the corner which, it's a ladder match. That happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, he got his German suplex off into the ladder, split the ladder. It's
fantastic.
In half. So DIY ended up making their way up the ladder in tandem, dangling, and they were grabbing for the belts. Authors of Pain come in, push the ladder away from them.
Yeah, so DIY is dangling from the thing that's holding the belts up. Yeah.
Authors of Pain grabs each one.
Power bombs them,
super collider, and then Authors of Pain jump up to get the titles.
Yep.
Crowd just starts going mental, you know, with the heel heat that they're getting.
Yeah.
And then we had the Ciampa heel turn. It was, I mean, this to me right now, if you're gonna talk about any of these matches being a possible match of the year candidate, I mean, in terms of my own personal list, this one is, in terms of at the very least, no other tag team match even comes close to this. And I'm counting the like the triple threat that we saw live. All those, this right here is my guy.
It was because
if you think about it, it's all been DIY story. Now let's talk about, to me, I'll be honest with you, seems kind of obvious. I'm going to say Gargano goes to the Cruiserweight division. Ciampa goes on to Raw or SmackDown to be a heel.
You think so?
I think
after, so. After they have their blow off?
Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know, because when they first announced 205 Live, didn't they say both Gargano and Ciampa were going there?
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to just continue this on over there.
No, I think they're continuing on NXT.
You really? That's the most likely scenario?
Oh, yeah. Because if Gargano goes to 205 Live and, say, Ciampa goes to SmackDown, they can't really give us the feud that we all now want to see.
Yeah, I know.
So I think it's got to culminate. At least part one has to culminate
in
NXT.
It's insane, though.
I know.
It's insane that they would break this tag team up.
But I guess they can have Ciampa say, you know, for so long, because it was Gargano who tapped out in Brooklyn last year.
Yeah.
He can say, you know, I could have done so much better. You've kept me down, so on and so forth, that kind of thing.
You know, but I it wouldn't surprise.
Blame Gargano for all the losses, essentially.
It wouldn't surprise. I really don't. Like, you're probably right. That's probably the direction they're going to go in. I really hope they don't. I hope there's something else. I hope there's something that's not cliched, because nothing about DIY has been cliched so far.
I'm trying to interpret.
They've broken so many conventions.
I'm trying to interpret what he said to Gargano before he swerved him. This wasn't our moment. This was my moment.
Well, see, that was when I found out that's what he said. I was thinking, well, this is the send off. This is my limelight, because we're not. I mean, it could even be as meta or as referential as. They're breaking us up, so what better way to kick off my solo career
than to swerve my tag team partner?
Because we're not together anyways, and that's how you, in the words of Triple H, Pete Dunne, make a name for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. Say, hey, this was the plan for us. I'm just following through with it because I need to make sure that where I'm going next, people know that I'm a danger.
That's interesting. I don't know if they'd be that self-aware about things, though.
You're right, and you're probably going to be as obvious as you're holding me down. But God, that's dumb. It's so silly.
It seems a tad light as far as rationale
for this.
I know
this is massive,
but if that's kind of what just starts it, and then they can go off from that to make it far more interesting. Given what Gargano and Ciampa have given us so far. I think they can take a small idea like that that might be kind of hackneyed and done to death
and do something different
and do something
with it.
interesting with it.
I mean,
that's what I'm hopeful about.
Yeah,
because those guys are so good. They're so good at telling stories, and they obviously know each other very well.
Yeah,
and you know, when Gargano eventually beats Ciampa in November at TakeOver for their blow off, at least you know the first part of their feud, it's gonna be massive.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. I think it'd be a crime if they did actually send them on their way at this point.
And it seems, from what I heard, Ciampa hurt his leg on, I want to say, Thursday at a house show.
Yeah, it was the day before. Or 2 days before.
2 days before. And there were spots in this match, it seemed like he was favoring one leg. But I don't think there's ever been... Triple H said afterwards that he thought Ciampa suffered a significant injury.
Yeah.
But...
significant injury.
Who knows how much of that is?
Yeah,
is
we'll
real
see.
Or not.
We'll see. I mean, the tapings are Thursday.
No, well, I don't. Yeah, I don't know when the next TV tapings are.
I think they're this week.
Okay, there's the stuff the shot before TakeOver.
The Velveteen
it's be on
Dream,
Wednesday.
Or isn't that what's called the Velveteen Dream?
Yeah,
Patrick Clark, and apparently he's got a crazy. One of our friendos was there. He said he's got a crazy entrance.
Cool. Can't wait.
And Aleister Black fought also in the pre
Kurt Hawkins
show. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? Mm-hmm. They brought Kurt Hawkins down to NXT. God, that's hilarious. Anyways, that's the NXT TakeOver Chicago review.
Great show. If you haven't watched it, check it out.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a lot of really, really good stuff on here. Let us know what you guys think in the comments. And until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.